Years ahead of the dominant media, find out first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Wednesday, the 1st of December in the year 2004. Wednesday, the 1st of December in the year 2004. Our spiritual message this evening is the prayer for the power of the Holy Spirit. Come, Holy Spirit, and renew me, so that I can reach my fullest potential. Fill me to overflowing with your gifts, your power, your love. I open myself to receive all that the Father has for me. He is the creator of everything, and I am his child. Therefore, far more is available to me than I ever imagined. Help me to receive it all. Teach me how to use your gifts. Instruct me in all truth. Fill my mind with your thoughts and help me to recognize your voice. Make me an instrument of the Father's will. That should be one hanging on the wall in front of me, shouldn't it, folks? All right, before we get started, I am going to complete what we started last night, the Zionist campaign. Just a minute here. Right, the Zionist campaign for war with Iraq in revisionist perspective. And last night, we read about, heard about how the same creatures that have promulgated the current never-ending war on terrorism, beginning with Afghanistan and now in Iraq and looks like Iran and Syria, and they probably don't intend to stop, folks, unless something very drastic happens. And we know that with God all things are possible, don't we? And I'm going to finish that tonight. But I had a couple of short items here that I wanted to share with you and remind you that Jeff Bennett will be on tomorrow night as guest host for Sweet Liberty. And as I told you, that we're going to give this a try through the month of December. And so that we will be broadcasting, I will be broadcasting to you 3 days a week, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And Jeff Bennett will be on Thursday. And we did this because Jeff had heard that we were going to have to go off the air for lack of support, not lack of support, but sufficient support to keep the broadcast going. And this, as I've said, will cut the cost of our broadcast time down in 25% per month. And so that should help, because it seemed to me that we've been sliding behind about 5% a month, or excuse me, 25%, about $500-$600. So anyway, you'll get to hear Jeff Bennett tomorrow night and each Thursday night through December, and we'll see how it goes, folks. Getting back just for a moment to this situation with the vote, remember in 2000, how the courts, how we were shown the power that the courts in this country have been given and have now wield. And it's starting again. There's a headline here from the Washington Post. Kerry team seeks to join fight to get Ohio County to recount. So they're going to court with this to get an Ohio County to, and I haven't read the thing. I just wanted you to hear. This is short. Let me read it to you. Senator John Kerry's presidential campaign asked an Ohio judge yesterday, to allow it to join a legal fight there over whether election officials in one county may sit out the state's impending recount. A pair of third-party presidential candidates who said that reports of problems at the polls on Election Day are not being addressed are forcing the Buckeye State to recount its entire presidential vote. But David Yost, a lawyer for Delaware County just outside Columbus, won a temporary restraining order last week blocking any recount there. He told the Columbus Dispatch that a second court would be a poor use of county resources. President Bush won the mostly Republican area handily, unofficial results show. Lawyers for the Kerry campaign asked to join the Green Party presidential candidate David Cobb, Libertarian candidate Michael Badnarik, and the National Voting Rights Institute in the fight to force the county to participate in the recount. If there's going to be a recount in Ohio, we don't want it to exclude Delaware County or any other county that might decide to follow Delaware's lead. Kerry lawyer Dan Hofferman said it should be a full, fair, and accurate recount. Bush won the critical battleground state by approximately 136,000 votes, a victory that also won him a second term. Cobb's lawyers filed papers yesterday asking a federal court to take over the case, which is scheduled for state court. So here we go again, folks. And then there's another headline here. The Guardian UK. The Guardian UK. Voters to challenge U.S. elections. And then there was another headline. Nationwide voting errors tallied. More than 30,000 complaints have been lodged. So it ain't over yet, is it, ladies and gentlemen? Here's another one. We were talking about this last night, this Alberto Gonzalez. And there is an item here from the Village Voice that Alberto Gonzalez, is replacing John Ashcroft as Attorney General. And he's a Hispanic or whatever. And I want to say something about that, too. But this says Alberto Gonzalez is worse than Ashcroft. And I'm not going to read the whole article. But maybe next week we might spend a little bit of time taking a look at this. I don't know. We'll see about that. And it is, remember I was saying that I thought it was the 13th of December? That is the date. I read that today. The 13th of December is the day that the states get together and turn in their electoral votes. So we may have a Christmas surprise yet, folks. Oh, and there's one more thing. I left this baby over in the printer. Remember when we were talking about the La Raza group? And I guess that is this Gonzalez, that he is a member of the La Raza group. And this is a group that intend to take back the southwestern states that were once Mexican territory. This guy is going to be Attorney General for the U.S. Government, Inc. And remember I told you that there was a, I'm just going to read this, This comes from a report of the 68th Convocation of the Rose Cross Order. This is situated in Quakertown, Pennsylvania, folks. On page 23, The Introduction to the Great Seal by R. Swinburne Clymer. This was written July 6, 1916. This is excerpted. Now listen to this. He says, more than a year ago, Grace K. Morey, the author of the article, The Great Seal of the United States and Its Mystic Significance, prepared a sketch for a short primer of the Illuminati teachings. If the student will give serious study to the article on the seal of the United States, he will find that on the reverse side of the seal, which is as yet uncut, there is to be found the pyramid, but with the capstone as yet not placed. And thus he will see that the philosophy of the Illuminati is the absolute and undeniable philosophy upon which these United States are founded. Let me do that again. And thus he will see that the philosophy of the Illuminati is the absolute and undeniable philosophy upon which these United States are founded, as is clearly indicated by the drawings of the reverse side of the United States seal. And thus it would appear that the unseen hierarchy which shaped the foundation of the Great Republic, which must someday rule the world, are the same hierarchies which gave us the soul science philosophy as taught by the Illuminati. And now, let us look into the future. This was written in 1916. And now, let us look into the future, not far, but just beyond the line. We find that scholars condemn the design of the reverse side of the United States seal, that it has never been cut, that has remained hidden as though it was something to be ashamed of. However, though this appears the truth, it is not the truth. The reason why it has never been cut is because the time is not yet, as the capstone has not yet been set. And what is this capstone? My reader, prepare for a shock. When Atlantis ruled the world, that which is now America was connected with Egypt by what is now Mexico. And in Mexico, in the territory of Yucatan, there is a pyramid in which the fire philosophers worshipped God as divine fire and life, in like manner as did the initiates of Egypt, for the two were then one. I want to do that again. It's a fairly long sentence. And what is the capstone? My reader, prepare for a shock. When Atlantis ruled the world, that which is now America was connected with Egypt by what is now Mexico. And in Mexico, in the territory of Yucatan, there is a pyramid in which the fire philosophers worshipped God as divine fire and life, in like manner as did the initiates of Egypt, for the two were then one. America is not complete and will not be complete, cannot be complete, until Mexico is again part of America as she was in the long ago. And when Mexico is once again a part of the United States, then will the capstone have been set on the pyramid and the reverse side of the U.S. seal will be cut. May it not be long until the Holy Pyramid shall be completed, and may it be completed without the shedding of blood. That is on page 24 of a book titled It's the 34th Convocation, and this is an introduction. Here it is. The book is titled Fundamental Laws, a report of the 68th Convocation of the Rose Cross Order. And this was on page 2324, folks. So therefore, they're moving right along, aren't they? And may it be done without bloodshed. The shedding of blood is part and parcel of this plan, folks. They are the blood sacrifices to their king despot of the blood of Zion. And if you doubt it, read in the Old Testament the blood rituals of the priests of Jehovah. They drenched themselves in blood. They had to pour it on their heads, on their robes, all over the ground around them. There was a total bloody mess to pacify a bloodthirsty deity to which Judeo-Christians, along with the Jews, pay homage today. That deity in the Bible is called Jehovah, or Lord God Almighty, and Yahweh, call it what you want. That is the same. It doesn't matter what the name is called. I've had people say to me, don't call it Jehovah. His name is Yahweh. Yahweh. We're still talking about the same bloody deity, folks. And it's right in the... And you know, I thought about this as I woke up this morning. The wars. The wars and the wars and the wars. Where does it come from? Have you read the Old Testament? And have you read the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of battles, wars, that Jehovah demanded of his, quote, chosen people? Chosen people. It's right there. And why wouldn't people who believe that that is the holy book, the first five books of the Old Testament is the Torah. The Torah is the foundation, the basis of the Talmud, the Babylonian Talmud. And that's where it all comes from. Even the ownership of slaves, even the ownership of slaves, that's in the Old Testament too. It was okay with Jehovah, Yahweh, 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 Jove, Jupiter, call it what you want. It is a phantom god. It is Lucifer, as Alan Watts so succinctly stated it. So we're going to get back to the Zionist campaign for war with Iraq in revisionist perspective. And I'm trying to find where I left off. I'm going to start right at the top of this page. This was written, by the way, in 2003 before George Bush declared the war on Iraq. And I want to remind you, listeners, and those who maybe weren't listening and aren't aware of it, but the day that he announced that Iraq would be attacked was the evening of the day of the Eve of Purim. And if you want to know about Purim, it is said in Jewish websites that it is the most fun of all the Jewish holidays. Purim is the celebration of hundreds of thousands, or 80 or 100,000 Persians, the death of them, out of the book of Esther in the Old Testament. And the sacrifices, once again, there are so many things that have happened on Purim and on the eve of Purim. And George Bush, I believe it was maybe the 27th of, was it February, March? I'm sorry, I don't have the date plugged in. But it was the day of the eve of Purim that he announced it. And as the announcers were talking that day before George W. Bush made the announcement, you could see Aaron Brown and these other Jews on CNN, the Communist News Network. You could see their excitement. And as they were talking about their expectation that at any moment the president is going to be announcing the attack on Iraq, there was a box, a printed box underneath the announcers, and you know what it said, folks? Presidential military decision, a time of our choosing. A time of our choosing. I have it on tape. I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw it, and I never saw it again. And I wondered how many people saw that and realized what in the world it was saying. A time of our choosing, the Talmudic, Pharisaical, priestly celebration of Purim. A time of our choosing when more blood is shed for our, quote, God, Jehovah, Yahuwah. It says here that Zionists admit a U.S. attack upon Iraq would serve Israeli Zionist interests, but it would also serve the interests of everyone else, so we're told. This is why, so their tune goes, it is not Zionist forces that are pushing for a U.S. attack on Iraq, but rather concerned patriots who realize what a danger to world peace that Saddam Hussein really is. It is important to note that the Bush administration and its Zionist allies attempt to make people believe that somehow going to war with Saddam Hussein's Iraq is in the best interest of everyone. And I have read this, but I'll just keep on. It's a bit of a repeat. It's on the same page. As the psychologist Kevin McDonald has pointed out, this is an age-old Jewish tactic, making sectarian Jewish interests appear to be congruent with the interests of the Gentile world. And just as importantly, even those in the U.S. media who argue against war with Iraq will go to great pains to cover up how Gentile and Jewish Zionists associated with the Jewish lobby are pushing the U.S. into war with Iraq. For example, consider the case of Elizabeth Sullivan, foreign affairs correspondent for the pro-Zionist Jewish-owned Plain Dealer in Cleveland, Ohio's most important newspaper. Let me do that again. The Plain Dealer, Cleveland, Ohio's most important newspaper, is Jewish-owned. And he said, consider the case of Elizabeth Sullivan, foreign affairs correspondent for the Plain Dealer. Although Ms. Sullivan is on record as being opposed to a war with Iraq, she nevertheless goes to great lengths to hide Zionist involvement in promoting a U.S. attack upon Iraq. Her rationalizations are typical of what one will find in mainstream U.S. newspapers. I wrote her the following email. Congratulations on your fine editorial in The Plain Dealer, September 9th, 02, which opposed the U.S. attack on Iraq. I have only one criticism. You failed to mention, out of fear of the powerful Jewish Zionist lobby, that one of the primary reasons that we have problems with dictators like Hussein is because of unbridled U.S. support for Israel and political Zionism. Now, the author here, I don't know why he would write something like that, because we weren't having trouble with Saddam Hussein, folks. We, the United States, or the people, the American people, nor the government, the U.S. government incorporated, were having problems with Saddam Hussein. There was never a threat made, ever, 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 not in words, not in writing, against the United States. So the author, for whatever reason, and don't, you know, these are the kind of little hooks you see in just about everything you read, really wonderful articles, but they'll turn around and insinuate or state, well, yes, Saddam Hussein was a monster, is a monster, and he should be taken out, but, and that's part of the promulgation of the ongoing lie about Saddam Hussein. He said, this continues. his letter to her. I thought it was done. It says, if the U.S. were fair and neutral in the Middle East, then a lot of our problems with the Arab Muslim world would end. If we would stop giving Israel the supplies to oppress the Palestinians, then dictators like Hussein would lose much of their appeal among the Arab Muslim masses. Dictators like Hussein. Miss Sullivan, that's end quoting. Miss Sullivan responded with the line of political thinking that is probably representative of the Jewish-influenced pro-Zionist media as a whole. She said, quote, thanks for your note. Of course, I dispute part of the premise. We are not on the warpath because of Jewish lobbying pressures, but because of a wider geostrategic view that has alighted on Saddam Hussein as a rogue dictator we have the capacity to subdue. I want to read that again. I'm sorry. She said, thanks for your note. Of course, I dispute part of the premise. We're not on the war path because of Jewish lobbying pressure, but because of a wider geostrategic view that has alighted on Saddam Hussein as a rogue dictator that we have the capacity to subdue. Yes, and that's in... She said, yes, the war on terrorism has blinded us to the downside of Israel's war on Palestinian terrorism and made us even less of an honest broker in the region than we were. But to suggest that the Jewish lobby is driving the aircraft carrier would be a big mistake. I take issue with your wording, too. Broadened American sympathy for Israel of late stems from the murderous spree of suicide bombings, not from some nefarious lobby. End quoting. The author goes on. He says her claims are flatly false. The distinguished British journalist Robert Fisk pointed out in the highly respected British newspaper Independent that, quote, only the nation among all the nation newspaper among all of America's newspapers and magazines has dared to point out that a large number of former Israeli lobbyists are now working within the American administration, and the Bush plans for the Middle East, which could cause a massive political upheaval in the Arab world, fit perfectly into Israel's own dream for the region. The magazine listed Vice President Dick Cheney, the arch hawk in the U.S. administration, and John Bolton, now Under Secretary of State for Arms Control, with Douglas Faith, the third most senior executive at the Pentagon, as members of the advisory board of the pro-Israeli Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs. That's JINSA. I'm going to do that again. Maybe I need to slow down here. Some of these sentences are very long. The magazine, The Nation, the magazine listed Vice President Dick Cheney with Douglas Faith. Let me just read the whole thing. The magazine listed. I'll do this after the break, folks, because that sentence is so convoluted. We are going to take a 60-second break here, and I hope that you will get your pen in your hand. You will be given my address, and I hope that those of you who are listening who would like to see the broadcast continue might like to step forward and become a participating listener sponsor. Sweet Liberty is brought to you by our listeners who are sponsoring this broadcast. You could be part of it. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
I'm sorry, folks. We're back. I'm back. Let us try that paragraph. It's a whole paragraph sentence. And he started by saying that the distinguished British journalist Robert Fiske pointed out in the highly respected British newspaper Independent that, and I am going to the second paragraph now, the one I was stumbling with. He said the Nation, he was talking about the Nation, among all America's newspapers and magazines, only the Nation has dared to point out that a large number of former Israeli lobbyists are now working within the American administration, and the Bush plans for the Middle East, which could cause a massive political upheaval in the Arab world, fit perfectly into Israel's own dreams for the region. The magazine listed Vice President Dick Cheney, the arch hawk in the U.S. administration, and John Bolton, now Under Secretary of State for Arms Control, with Douglas Faith, the third most senior executive at the Pentagon, as members of the advisory board of the pro-Israeli Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs, that's JINSA, before joining the Bush government. So Vice President Dick Cheney, Douglas Faith, and John Bolton were all members of the advisory board of JINSA. Richard Perle, chairman of the Pentagon's Defense Policy Board, is still an advisor on the Institute, as is the former CIA director, James Woolsey. Actually, Richard Perle, I believe it was Richard Perle who was Man of the Year, named Man of the Year at JINSA, folks. And these people, pro-Israeli lobbyists on this very powerful Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs, are now in high positions in the U.S. government. Fisk continues, Michael Ledeen, described by The Nation as one of the most influential Jensens in Washington, has been calling for total war against, quote, terror with regime change for Syria, Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, and the Palestinian Authority. Mr. Perle advises the Defense Secretary, Donald Rumsfeld. Who refers to the West Bank and Gaza as the so-called occupied territories, and arranged the anti-Saud Kernel of Evil briefing by Laurent Marowick that so outraged the Saudi royal family last month. The Saudi regime may itself be in great danger as the princes of the House of Saud attempt to seize more power for themselves in advance of the departure of the dying King Fahd. Continuing this line of thought, Fisk adds, JINSA's website says it exists to, quote, listen, folks, inform the American defense and foreign affairs community about the important role Israel can and does play in bolstering democratic interests in the Mediterranean and the Middle East. Next month, Michael Rubin of the right-wing and pro-Israel American Enterprise Institute, who referred to the outgoing U.N. Human Rights Commissioner Mary Robinson as an abettor of terrorism, joined the U.S. Defense Department as an Iran-Iraq expert. Fisk then reveals the Jewish director of JINSA. Quote, according to The Nation, Irving Moskovitz, the California bingo magnate who has funded settlements in the Israeli-occupied territories, is a donor as well as director of JINSA. Finally, Fisk points out that President Bush will not reveal to the American public the influence JINSA has on his foreign policy. Fisk stated, quote, President Bush, of course, will not be talking about the influence of the pro-Israeli lobbyists when he presents his vision of the Middle East at the UN. And the author, that's end quoting from Robert Fisk, and the author says even the New York Times Magazine confirmed that Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz, you know, I'm thinking that it was Wolfowitz, folks, who was JINSA's Man of the Year. It doesn't matter. There's probably like two peas in a pod. But one of these high-ups in the U.S. government was named JINSA's Man of the Year a couple years ago. Would have been that year when they declared the quote, war on Iraq. Okay. Even the New York Times Magazine confirmed that Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz, a dedicated Jewish Zionist, is the main Bush administration advocate for war on Iraq. Here's how the article describes in the New York Times Magazine. Here's how the article describes this Israeli-centric official. Quote, student deferment kept him out of the military draft during the Vietnam War. In the first days after September 11th, when Secretary of State Powell and others within the administration contended it was too early to put Iraq on the agenda, that there was a war to win in Afghanistan first, and there was no evidence Iraq was complicit in the attacks on the Pentagon and Twin Towers, Wolfowitz argued that Iraq was at the heart of the threat. The article in the Jewish-owned and pro-Zionist magazine continues, leaving aside the offensive suggestion of dual loyalty you hear from some of Wolfowitz's critics, always off the record, that Israel exercises a powerful gravitational pull on the man. As a teenager, he spent his father's sabbatical semester in Israel. His sister is married to an Israeli. He is friendly with Israel's generals and diplomats. He is something of a hero to the heavily Jewish neoconservative movement. Paul Wolfowitz. As a teenager, he spent his father's sabbatical semester in Israel. His sister is married to an Israeli. He is friendly with Israel's generals and diplomats. He is something of a hero to the heavily Jewish neoconservative movement. Does this, you know, as I'm reading this to you, it seems unreal, folks. It seems unreal that we're actually talking about this and that this has actually happened in this country. And I am convinced, I am sorry to say, I am convinced that it was all planned this way and that this was an America, what America was founded for, just as Alan Watt asserted many years ago. And here we are, we Americans, growing up, believing that we are the most fortunate people in the whole world because we live in America and we have a constitution and we are free, and nobody else in the world has ever been as free as us. And I've told you, I used to cry. Tears of love, I guess, when even in school, when before the sporting events, I was a cheerleader and I was an athlete in school, and whenever we did the anthem or whatever, tears would come to my eyes of gratitude that I live in America and love for America. And I don't not love America. I do not not love America. I love what America has meant to us and what it could have been, what it truly could have been. But this sounds like insanity, doesn't it, huh? And this is all so blatant today. And hardly anybody pays any attention to it. But of course, when we realize the absolute power that these creatures wield over the government, over the federal government, state governments, local governments, it emanates from the United Nations and it trickles right on up into the local governments. And I say up because in actuality, the strength and power of the government of this country belongs on the local level, local and state level. That's where it's at. So I'm getting back to this article. The author says, thus, contrary to what Foreign Affairs correspondent Sullivan claims, Jewish and Gentile Zionist functionaries and associates of the Jewish lobby are in fact driving the aircraft, and they are in fact leading the U.S. on the warpath with Iraq. Keep in mind that Sullivan is a Gentile that writes for a pro-Zionist, Jewish-owned Cleveland Plain Dealer, and she would not dare expose the enormous role that the Jewish Zionist lobby plays in foreign and domestic affairs, for if she did, her career in journalism would be in serious jeopardy. Wah, wah. This is where it comes down to the nitty-gritty, isn't it, folks? It is in making choices. And isn't it amazing that those choices seem to always be made in, oh, it's my job. I have to do it. It's always the money, isn't it? And the power and the prestige for those people who are in positions, prestigious positions. It's all about ego, power, influence, and the love of money. Yeah, she would dare if she had a backbone and if she had a conscious connection to her spirit. She would realize she has a choice. And every day, more and more and more, we each of us need to remember in all things that we do, in all things that we say, that we have a choice. We always have a choice, even in our attitudes. When we find that we're having an attitude problem, then all we have to do is ask, help me to see this differently, please. But we won't do that unless we examine ourselves, will we? And more and more, it's so apparent how important it is. It's the only thing that's really important when you think about it. Know thyself. And the only way we're going to do that is by questioning ourselves, examining ourselves, examining our thoughts, our attitudes, our feelings. That's the only way we're going to know, and we're going to ask, aren't we? And here's the little prayer right here in front of me. Search me, Father. This is from Psalm 139, verses 23 and 24. Search me, Father. Know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. We could ask that every day. We could ask it every hour. As a reminder, couldn't we, folks? Okay, let me get on here. We're almost done. Consider Sullivan's other claim. Quote, broadened sympathy for Israel of late stems from the murderous spree of suicide bombings, not from some nefarious lobby. This is false, and I think she knows it. The former Congressman Paul Findlay wrote a classic study of the nefarious Jewish Zionist lobby that does in fact exist in the U.S., titled They Dare to Speak Out. People and Institutions Confront the Israeli Lobby. It shows how the lobby funds pro-Israel congressmen and how opponents of Israel and Zionism are targeted for attack and defeat. Well, if you, listen, if you haven't heard this, if you would like to hear it, I think it's in the Israel section at sweetliberty.org, a BBC documentary. It's on tape. I transcribed it so you can read it and listen to it. And it's titled, A Lobby to Reckon With. Folks, it would blow your mind away. And the AIPAC, some guy from AIPAC, I'm pretty sure it was, literally admits that it doesn't pay any Arab to vote against them. I think he said it doesn't pay them, congressman, it doesn't pay them to vote for Arafat. I think that's what he said. But they just come right out and admit it, admit all the power that they have. It's called A Lobby to Reckon With. You can listen and read along, and it'll blow you away. And he claims, this guy that Stephen Sacker, I think his name was, he claims that 40 million Judeo-Christians, today call themselves Christian Zionists, are the power behind this push. And think about it, I bet there's a lot more of them than there are Jews. Back to the article. The July 2nd, 2002 issue of the Washington Times carried a story on how Jewish Zionist sources targeted for defeat black American congressmen who were critical of Israel and Zionism. They refused to vote for pro-Israel resolutions, so the Jewish Zionist sources funded their opponents. In this way, they rid Congress of black individuals who are critical of Zionism, and they fill Congress with black individuals who are pro-Israel. And, of course, there is more. Israel's ambassador to the U.S. is on record as supporting a U.S. strike against Iraq. Utilizing the age-old Jewish tactic of making sectarian Jewish interests appear to be in the interest of all Gentiles, he claimed that, quote, we would all benefit by an attack upon Iraq, because a regime change in Iraq would supposedly cause the Palestinians and Iran to be drawn toward democracy, end quote. The Israel correspondent for the New Republic, Yossi Klein Halevi, whatever, revealed that if, quote, if you ask almost any Israeli Jew, left, right, or center, whether the U.S. should attack Hussein, and the answer is unequivocal, the evil must be uprooted. Continuing with this vein of thought, he asserts, true, we, the people of Israel, have an obvious interest in ridding the Middle East of a formidable enemy. But so does the rest of the world, and especially the Arab world, even if it does not realize it. Continuing with this vein of thought, never mind, I just read that. I was looking back to get something clear in my mind. The author says, we are told by the Bush administration that Hussein allegedly has weapons of mass destruction, and he may use them against the U.S. Thus, in order to prevent this scenario from coming to pass, the U.S. must act now. Can President Bush and company be believed? Does Hussein's Iraq really have the willingness and capability to hit the U.S.? There is expert opinion against Bush's claims. According to Scripps Howard article, defense experts believe Iraq is capable of developing a nuclear weapon within 3 months to a year if it could smuggle in nuclear material, but it's unlikely to have a missile that could hit the U.S., nor is it likely to strike against the U.S. with any nuclear, biological, or chemical weapon, even if Iraq could, because of the certainty of swift and devastating retaliation, these same experts claim. Senator Richard Durbin, an Illinois Democrat, said some information that could weaken the Bush administration's case against Iraq remains classified. If not the U.S., then who does Hussein's Iraq really threaten? Not Germany, France, Ireland, Italy, Indonesia, Angola, Nigeria, China, or Japan. They have nothing to fear from Iraq. The one country that has something to fear from Iraq is Israel. Israel. General, that's ISIS, Ra, and El. Israel is the name of those three main gods. ISIS, Ra, and El. General Wesley Clark, former NATO Supreme Ally Commander, acknowledged that Bush's war plans serve, first and foremost, Jewish Zionist interests. He said those who favor this attack now tell you candidly and privately that it is probably true that Saddam Hussein is no threat to the U.S., but they're afraid at some point he might decide, if he had a nuclear weapon, to use it against Israel. Indeed, as far back as August 16, 2002, Israel was urging U.S. officials not to delay a military strike against Iraq's Saddam Hussein. Israeli officials claimed that their intelligence organizations gathered evidence to show that Iraq is speeding up efforts to produce biological and chemical weapons. I'm going to jump down here. Why should the United States go to war to serve Israeli Zionist interests? Why should mostly non-Jewish, white, black, and Hispanic Americans, who make up the vast majority of the U.S. armed forces, why should they have to risk their lives for the Jewish state of Israel? It is ironic that one of the major figures in the Bush administration pushing for an attack upon Iraq, Paul Wolfowitz, is an American Jew who acquired a student deferment to keep him out of the military draft during the Vietnam War. I'm going to I'm going to stop here, folks. We've got just about a page to go, but I think this is covered well. Let me just read a paragraph here. He says, as the Jewish scholar Ian Lustig and Yuri Davis have shown, far from working for an integrated society in which Jews and Arabs function as a social, political equals, the Jews who founded Israel created a society in which Israeli Jews dominate Israeli Arabs, a separate and unequal society in which discrimination is part of the established social order. Think about that. Non-discrimination. We can't even say the J word or to make a disparaging of remark about somebody of, quote, color in case it would be a hate crime. Listen to this. 93% of Israel's territory had been, until the Supreme Court decision of March 2000, had been legally defined as land which can be leased and cultivated only by Jews. Key institutions such as the kibbutz, the collectivist Jewish settlements, mainly agricultural, are reserved exclusively for Jews, as Israeli scholar Yuri Davis has reminded us in his thorough study, Israel, an Apartheid State. Lustig has pointed out that the Israeli military is by and large a segregated institution. Most Muslim Arabs who constitute the overwhelming majority of Israeli Arab citizens do not serve in the armed forces. They are not conscripted, nor are they permitted to volunteer for service. This has important social consequences. In Israel, participation in the armed services is a prerequisite to social advancement and mobility. cut off from the military, they are cut off from access to one of the main avenues of social advancement. Christians and Muslims cannot marry Jews in Israel. And if they are married elsewhere, the marriage is not recognized by the rabbinical court in Israel. Consider the following facts about Israel, which make Israel a racist state. The law of the right of return grants any Jew, but no one else, automatic Israeli citizenship. The nationality law discriminates against non-Jews so stringently that many Palestinian residents of Israel stuck there when Israel captured their land in 48 were denied citizenship, even though their families had lived in Palestine for many generations. If the U.S. goes to war with Iraq, we're going to war to defend a racially segregated apartheid state. This is ironic and hypocritical. Our mass media and government condemn those who advocate segregation here in the U.S. or anywhere else in the world, and yet we're going to war to defend a racially segregated state in the Middle East, a tribute to how the Jewish Zionist power elite has corrupted our value system. And we finished that. And we are out of time here tonight, folks. I will see you back on Monday. And thank you so much for being with us this week. Remember that Jeffrey Bennett will be guest host tomorrow night. So be sure to tune in. And be sure to tune in back next Monday night, and I'll be back with you. And if you have your pen in your hand, or if you'll get it, let me give you my address. Before the end of the broadcast, if you would like to participate in keeping this broadcast alive, I think we have a chance now. And so I hope you do come forth. As a matter of fact, our bumper music is starting, and Nicholas will give my address. So I will say, Auf Wiedersehen. I'll say goodnight, and I will see you back on Monday morning, folks. God, or Monday evening, excuse me. God bless you all. Have sweet dreams tonight. Have a lovely weekend. Good night.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.
The opinions expressed are those of the...